The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will visit Northern Ireland today to meet the leaders of the main political parties at Stormont. Now, this visit comes ahead of an expected announcement tomorrow of legislation that could unilaterally override central elements of the Northern Ireland Protocol, including those that govern customs checks, food safety and goods regulation. Speaking to Sophie Ridge on Sky News yesterday about the prospect of unilateral action from the British government, in quite an angry but measured way, Minister for Foreign Affairs Simon Coveney had this to say.
The last thing the EU wants, the last thing that Ireland wants, is tension with the UK, particularly at the moment, given the what's happening in Ukraine, Russian aggression, and the need to work together on an international stage. But unfortunately, it has been the briefings that has come from the British government this week that has raised a real red flag in Dublin and in Brussels, because the British government is now threatening to break international law, to break a treaty that they signed with the EU and that they designed with the EU and ratified with a huge majority in the House of Commons. And in doing so, potentially creating huge problems on the island of Ireland. And while there are issues that need to be resolved in relation to the implementation of the protocol, there are concerns within the unionist community in particular that need a comprehensive response. The way to do that isn't for the British government to act unilaterally and to brief against the EU in the way that they have this week, encouraging the Prime Minister to act like he's acted on Ukraine in relation to the protocol and urging him to rip it up. That kind of aggressive language does nothing to move us forward on what is a difficult issue. You and I have spoken about the fallout from Brexit on the island of Ireland before. We've just had an election in Northern Ireland, which was a difficult election. It was a polarising election. And the challenge for us all is to listen to all communities, unionist and nationalist, and people who don't describe themselves as either, and try to ensure that the agreements that we've signed in the past, which is now international law, is applied with the flexibility and the pragmatism to respond to all of those concerns, as opposed to legislating unilaterally for the concerns of one community in Northern Ireland, which it seems to me is what the British government is now saying that they will do as soon as this week, if the EU doesn't give them everything they want. So that is not the way to approach a problem with a neighbour, with a friend, and with allies and partners, which is what the UK has right across the European Union right now.
If you look at the comments that I've made this week, at the comments that the Taoiseach has made this week, you know, we are both friends of Britain. You know, England and Britain have shaped who I am, who many in the Irish cabinet are. You know, many of my family are British citizens. Some of my family work and employ a lot of people across the UK. I've been to university in England. You know, there isn't an anti-British bone in my body, quite the opposite. But what I see at the moment is a British government making statements, briefing against the EU and creating a lot of tension in my country, your closest neighbour, and also potentially being on the verge of making a decision that could fundamentally undermine the functioning of the institutions of the peace process in Northern Ireland.
And that was Simon Coveney talking to Sophie Ridge on Sky News yesterday. For more on all of this, Boris Johnson's arrival in Northern Ireland, I'm joined by Alison Morris, columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, commentator specialising in politics and security matters. Alison, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, what can we expect from Boris Johnson based on his interview with the Telegraph?
Well, as you say, Boris Johnson is visiting today. He's previously come under criticism for not being hands-on enough. During major political crises in the past, we've seen people like Tony Blair fly in to try and mediate, you know, John Major, Theresa May, they all arrived. Boris Johnson so far had been pretty hands-off, so I know he was coming under a lot of criticism for that. He's going to meet with the party leaders, but ahead of that, as you've said, he's been speaking to the Belfast Telegraph. He's written quite a lengthy platform piece where he is laying out what the British government intend to do. And if you get right to the bottom of that quite lengthy piece, you'll see that he said within days they intend to lay out to Parliament what their plans are in relation to the protocol and taking that unilateral action, which has been speculated on for several days now.
Simon Coveney's criticism of Boris Johnson that he seems to be basically siding with one party in Northern Ireland, and that is the DUP. He doesn't need the DUP anymore. He's got a thumping majority in Westminster. Why would he do this?
I have a difference of opinion that I don't think that he's trying to please the DUP, but I do think that he is trying to appease the ERG, that very hardline section of backbenchers who he relies on for his survival. And they are very much in favour of scrapping large elements of the protocol. So, you know, when it comes to what Boris Johnson's motivations are, I don't particularly think that it's that his motivation is to try. Okay.
So it's nothing to do with the DUP. It's just that the DUP's interests align with that of the ERG, Jacob Rees-Mogg's group of arch Brexiteers.
So they do. They've always been on a very similar page, and we've seen that, you know, from the very beginning, that those DUP MPs have been very close to the ERG. The ERG have been pushing. They would have been in favour of a no-deal Brexit, and they've been pushing for that. And Boris Johnson's on shaky ground at the minute himself in Westminster in terms of his own leadership. So I do think that it's just a symptom of him trying to save his own skin by appeasing the ERG. That'll work in the favour of the DUP. But I'm not sure, had it just been the DUP pushing for this, that there would have been any action. Because, as you say, you know, there's not a single vote in Northern Ireland that keeps Boris Johnson in power. And therefore, and the fact that three quarters of our electorate in the recent election voted for parties who are in favour of small reform of the protocol, but not of scrapping it completely. Mm.
What sort of a welcome is he going to get? I mean, he is going to tell the DUP and the other parties that they've got to work together and get back to work and all this sort of nonsense. When Geoffrey Donaldson has committed to staying in Westminster rather than leading the DUP in the Assembly. So we'll get a lot of bluster from Boris Johnson today. Is anyone likely to have a right go at him in the way that Simon Coveney had a right go at him yesterday on Sky News?
Well, I do know that there is a protest plan by victims of the Troubles, people who have lost loved ones. They have planned to protest when Boris Johnson arrives, and that is due to his plans over legacy. Now, we know last year the British government released a command paper that laid out what they planned in terms of legacy, which was basically a blanket amnesty and also doing away with new inquests and civil cases. As part of this very detailed letter in the Telegraph today, he says that on legacy, he has listened to people in recent months and reflected on what they have heard, that dealing with the past will still require difficult decisions, but there will be no blanket amnesty. Immunity will only be available to those who cooperate, and prosecutions could follow for those who do not. Now, that is still angering a lot of those victims who say that that's not an investigation. I mean, basically, that means that there will be a truth sort of recovery process as part of the British government's legacy plans. If you cooperate with that, well, then you're immune. If you don't, well, then you could be liable for prosecution. But I mean, that just means, you know, does that mean you can just rock up to that and say, hello, I murdered five people, here's how I did it, thanks very much, and you have immunity? So, you know, I know that there will be a protest in those terms. I imagine when he has meetings with people like the Alliance Party, with Sinn Féin, with the SDLP and the UUP, that they will be urging him not to buckle down to the DUP's demands, that that's not what the majority of people want, that we do need reform of the protocol, but not scrapping it. But Geoffrey Donaldson has not moved. What DUP are saying is, we ran in this election on a mandate that we wouldn't go into government unless the protocol was scrapped. Scrapped or seriously, you know, reformed, depending on which DUP DUP politician you speak to, because some of them during interviews go, well, it has to be radically reformed, and some of them say scrapped. So where's the line there? You know, what is the red line? But in terms of what Geoffrey Donaldson does next, they refused to nominate a speaker on Friday, which means we can't even have a shadow assembly in operation. Yeah. Will this announcement by Boris Johnson today and what we expect Liz Truss to say to the Commons tomorrow be enough maybe for the DUP to nominate a speaker, but say they're not going to the executive? Because they've been, you know, let's face it, there is a credibility issue with Boris Johnson. He will tell them he's doing one thing and in the past he hasn't done it.
Yeah, so. But the problem is, Alison, so if they do compromise and facilitate the nomination of a speaker, it means that the assembly can meet, but there'll be no executive, so no executive decisions can be made. So there'll be the window dressing that we're all earning our money, we're being paid salaries and we're turning up for assembly meetings, but we're not actually getting anything done.
Yeah, and I think that the DUP, I mean, Geoffrey Donaldson is, you know, he's been a politician for a long time. He's a savvy enough operator, and he knows that while he can say, oh, we have a mandate not to return to the executive, how quickly is that good faith, even with his own hardline voters, going to disappear when we have months of assembly members being paid full salaries while people are genuinely struggling? And I'm sure, you know, you hear constantly to your show, people saying how they're struggling in terms of the cost of fuel and the cost of heating and the cost of food. Well, Northern Ireland, you know, that is the result. We know as a result of the Ukrainian war, we've seen fuel increases everywhere. But also remember that Northern Ireland has the added impact of anything that's coming from Brexit, which has greatly increased, you know, which has increased food prices in some sectors. So how long is he going to listen to that and be able to justify that? So I think he knows that. So Boris Johnson would be almost throwing him a life raft by saying this is what's going to happen and allowing him to nominate a speaker, because we had that sort of shadow assembly operating prior to the election. Remember, because the DUP pulled the First Minister out of the executive way back in February. So right up until the assembly was dissolved, it was operating in a shadow form, and it was getting some things done. It was passing small private members' bills and things, a piece of legislation, very important legislation went through, but it can't set a budget. And it also, and this is the crucial thing, it's £340 million of money that was set aside for mitigations to help people with the cost of living crisis, and that cannot be allocated while there's no executive.
So the plan, it appeared, would be stick around for 24 weeks, then we have another election, as Brandon Lewis or whoever is Secretary of State at the time has to ordain. But the gamble is then, if people will say, oh, we need more DUP in the Assembly so they can once again be First Minister and get what they want, or will people say, to hell with the DUP, we'll go somewhere else with our votes?
Well, isn't that the gamble that they would take? Because they are losing votes, but they lost first preference votes to the sort of harder line traditional unionist voice, that didn't materialise into seats. Jim Allister is still a one-man band in Stormont because his second preference votes, his candidates didn't stay in the race long enough to get elected, and their second preference votes went to the DUP. But where he did lose, where they have lost seats and where they have lost ground, is to the Alliance Party, to that middle ground. And people are moving in greater numbers towards those others. I mean, the Alliance Party nearly doubled their representation. So that is the gamble that he's taken. He could be banking on the fact that he could then whip up enough hysteria around there being a Sinn Féin First Minister that he'd get a greater number of people out and vote. But that's just another, you know, crocodile moment. What that will also do is that we'll get the nationalists vote out in even greater numbers, which happened in this election. You know, people who would maybe have voted for more moderate parties in the past have went, no, this is a rights issue, this is an equality issue. The DUP saying they'll refuse to nominate a deputy first minister, you know, is as much as saying, you know, well, no, not a Catholic need not apply for that job. And so therefore it brought a greater number of people out. So those kind of tactics can backfire spectacularly. And I don't know that the wisest thing for the DUP would be to go to another election in 6 months' time. It's in their best interest to try and find some way out of this impasse in the 6 months that they now have.
There's no doubt they're going to try and raise the ante. Liz Truss, when she announces the measures that they are talking about in the House of Commons, will be looking to override the protocol. They'd still have the protocol, but they would abandon checks, things like that. They would even be looking for checks of goods going north and south to, I suppose, be able to say that, well, we want to preserve the single market for those who are entitled to it. So therefore, Ireland, the Republic, has got to do its checks too, which, of course, would be unacceptable. So he'll up the ante in the hope that it gives him some more horse trading. But I can't see where it's going to get him in the long run. Because, you know, Brexit so far has been a bit of a failure for him, and he's just trying to window dress it as something else.
Yeah, and you know, just last night and this morning, I've been speaking to sources to try and work out what exactly Liz Truss is going to tell her fellow MPs. And what is expected to happen tomorrow is that tomorrow afternoon she will put before Parliament the British government's plans, and they will include which we're being told have already been signed off by the Attorney General, by the way, that they're completely, that the British government believe that they can legally override parts of the withdrawal agreement. They're saying that they will override Section 7A of the withdrawal agreement. Now, that is what removes the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice to rule on trade disputes arising from the protocol, while the rest of the UK left that, and the European Court of Justice has they don't have to abide by any of their trade disputes, basically, because the UK left because of Brexit, because of Northern Ireland's quite unique circumstances, because of the protocol. The European Court of Justice still has jurisdiction here. So what they're saying is that they will remove that and they will restore the Act of Union, which is something the DUP has said is necessary before they will form, form a government. What I've been told is, and this has been hinted at before in some of the sort of English, the London press, is that they'll come up with this two-lane approach. So goods that are clearly labelled as destined for the Republic will have to be checked, while those destined for Northern Ireland will be no longer subject to checks. The EU has previously said that's just not enough because that could risk, you know, things being contaminated into the single market. The British government said they're going to reverse the presumption of risk of goods entering. And if they want to do checks, well, then it's up to you to do your own checks, do them on the other side of the border.
So they are bent on breaking the international agreement that they made. It's kind of ironic. You've Boris Johnson running around Europe, you know, trying to present himself as some sort of wartime prime minister, praising the Ukrainians and condemning Putin for an illegal act. When in, I suppose, a minor way, because he's not at war, although God knows what he could precipitate, he's not at war involving Ireland or the EU. He's prepared to drive coach and four through an agreement that he himself brokered. It's quite astonishing, the hypocrisy.
It is, and we know, you know, from biographies and from people close to him that he does sort of style himself on Winston Churchill. That was his hero, and that was someone who, you know, he tries to emulate in lots of ways. So he does want, I think, to be that sort of wartime hero, you know, prime minister. But the fact is that they are intending to override parts of an agreement that they brokered. You know, that Lord Frost, along with the British government, sat down with the EU. They come up with this plan that would be a solution so there wouldn't be a hard border on the island of Ireland. This is what they signed off on, and they're now then going to renege on that. And what that does do in the future is, it, if you were to negotiate any kind of trade deal with the British government, could you trust them? And, you know, for, I think that, you know, for other MPs, and that's where I think they find Boris Johnson's leadership quite frustrating, is that the British government probably would have prided themselves in the past as being people who, if they signed a treaty or signed an accord, you know, they'd be trusted to stick by it. And clearly this means that anyone negotiating with them will say, well, am I negotiating with you in good faith or is this in bad faith? You know, are you just going to shake my hand and say, this is what we're going to do, and then walk away and completely change it in 5 months' time, 6 months' time? So, I mean, the EU, we haven't, because Liz Truss, we know that this is, or we expect this is what she's going to say tomorrow. But I would imagine as soon as she does say it, we'll get some feedback from the EU as to what they think of these plans. And I doubt very much.
Maybe he figures a trade war with Europe is something that would play to his domestic advantage, but to the detriment of ordinary people and the British economy. Anyway, we will find out what he's going to say later on. Alison Morris, columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.